Thanks for joining us on Streamlines, your source for water knowledge. I'm your host, John McMain, with South Dakota State University Extension. This is Episode 7. So when we think about controlled drainage, there are some differences that we consider. I mean, especially with tiling with the contour.
Right.
And if you tile up the hill, well, then you're
in trouble.
You're in trouble, yeah. I mean, that significantly increases your cost. If you tile on the contour, then you can use one control structure on a main to, you know, control 10 acres or something.
Sure.
One contractor I talked to, he said controlled drainage typically raises the cost of a tiling project by about
7%.
7%? 7%.
That's not a lot.
That's not a lot. And, I mean, we don't see yield bumps every year, but some of the research that's been done by the Transforming Drainage Project, just yield comparisons, they've seen up to 15% yield bumps. Obviously, that's going to vary year to year. And if you don't manage it right, you could take a yield hit. But 7% increase in cost, you know, 15% yield bump every third year, every other year.
You can eventually recoup that then.
You could eventually recoup that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm Jeff Strock. I am a soil scientist with the University of Minnesota, and I am located at the Southwest Research and Outreach Center near Lamberton, Minnesota.
So would you say controlled drainage is currently an economical practice?
So the question about economic viability and sustainability, you know, from the perspective of water quality and putting some value on the water that's leaving, I would say yes, it's very valuable from an economic standpoint. From a yield standpoint, the investment that a farmer is going to have to make to have a narrow drain spacing or a narrower drain spacing, and thinking about just the economic return from the yield perspective, I'd say, you know, it's kind of marginal to be beneficial because of that extra cost. But if you think about the other benefit over time, I really do think that there is some value there. It's just, it's hard to put a number on that. People have tried to put numbers on those things, and it's never been agreeable that people have found the right number. So at this point in time, I'd say it's a little bit on the marginal side, mainly because we have not seen those yield benefits that we've really tried to promote and expect that we would see. So yeah, from an economic standpoint, a little tricky. And that kind of goes for the idea, you know, that once we have these narrower drain spacings and we've got these practices with, you know, sub-irrigation or drainage water recycling, where we're trying to work with storing some of that drainage water, not only in the profile, but also, you know, in farm ponds and in reservoirs. Sometimes the cost and the effort that has to go in, I think, you know, there are some great lands where people can adopt this, but, you know, broadly speaking, it's probably not going to be the only tool in our toolbox for farmers to be able to think about how to improve yields and water quality in the future. I think it's certainly going to work for some people, and probably in eastern South Dakota, it has a better chance of being viable, mainly because of the fact that you guys have a pretty open slate in terms of installing drain tile and installing it so that you can actually use these systems. We're here, you know, in Minnesota, we've been drained for so long that we require a lot of retrofits, and that tends to be more expensive.
So one of the things Jeff talked about was how controlled drainage really helps us to weather the extremes. Because again, you know, we do have wet periods. We've seen increased wetting in South Dakota.
Absolutely.
We've seen it in Minnesota. We've seen it in Iowa. One study by Chris Hay and Dennis Toddy looked at the difference between 1960 to 1990, compared that with 1990 to 2009. And that second 20-year period was anywhere from 2 to 5 more inches of annual precipitation. So that's a 8 to 20% difference.
Look at the extreme from 2019 to 2020.
That's a huge extreme.
I had 47 to 48 inches at my gauge, yeah. My Kokoraz gauge.
Yeah.
And this year I'm about 14.
Wow. Wow.
That's an extreme.
So I'm working with a group of people in Minnesota, the GEMS group, which is using the Minnesota Supercomputing Center and a lot of high-tech expertise, trying to develop sensor arrays and sensor systems that are very economical, much less expensive than what you can buy, you know, typically research-wise, like you and I might buy. But again, I think as I perceive it and think about what's going to have to go into the technology, I think there's going to be a probably rather expensive rollout. And then over time, as that technology can become cheaper, that it'll be more viable. But that technology is, it's going to cost money to get all that set up. I wish I could say without any question of a doubt that, you know, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Everybody should do it. And that they were going to make millions of dollars doing it and it was going to be fruitful. But unfortunately, it has a place and it has some potential. But from an economic standpoint, it just doesn't seem like in the very, very near future, it's going to be a great big boom for people. Now, here's the other thing to think about as people that work in agriculture, you know, we're very tuned into sort of the thought processes that are out there in terms of potential climate variability and climate change. You know, in our part of the world, this northern corn belt area, the projections are that, you know, we're going to become drier during the growing season in the future. And that future that we're talking about is not that far away. You know, the future of climate projections, they're talking in the next 5 to 10 years that we're going to see some of these more drastic shifts, these larger extremes. And we're already seeing those extremes with months where we have some of the wettest months on record right next to the driest months on record. You know, you've experienced it in South Dakota. We've experienced it in Minnesota. So, you know, as I think about future climate variability and extremes becoming more extreme, where we get more frequent and longer dry periods, especially during the growing season, which is what climate change people are talking about, then I think that these types of technologies, conservation drainage, control drainage, and automation are going to be a much bigger deal. It really behooves us and those early adopters out there to be thinking, you know, beyond the end of the nose on our face and saying, okay, you know, I need to be prepared for what's going to happen in the next 5 years, not just what's going to happen next year. And there's a lot of farmers out there that I think that are starting to turn around and think that way. And they're looking a little more futuristically than just, you know, what's going to happen. Of course, it's really important what happens today and tomorrow and next year. But, you know, there's quite a number of growers out there in the southern part of Minnesota, and I know up in the valley that I've been visiting with, that are thinking a little bit further out and trying to manage and prepare themselves for the future.
I guess you can bring this soil health thing in a little bit, because aerated soils are more healthy than waterlogged soils.
Yeah.
And totally dry soils are less healthy than moist soils.
Sure.
So if you can control that middle ground, you've got a lot more potential for optimal microbial activity, carbon sequestration because productivity is higher,
yeah,
a good nutrient cycle.
Yeah.
It's kind of the sweet spot. We're trying to be in the sweet spot of where that corn plant or soybean plant wants to be.
Yep. Yeah, so really, I mean, from Jeff's perspective, controlled drainage gives us more opportunity or ability to kind of hit that middle ground where we need to be.
The sweet spot where the optimal corn yields come from.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
I mean, you know a lot about that. You work with soil health. You work with, I mean, you're an agronomist. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, waterlogged soils aren't healthy because we don't have that aerobic bacteria activity. But in the same regard, the soils that are too dry aren't healthy as well. So there's somewhere in between that we need to be as far as moisture content.
Sure. So potentially controlled drainage, maybe active controlled drainage, maybe automated controlled drainage gives us a better opportunity to hit that sweet spot.
Right where we want to be.
Jeff really has a pretty cool vision for controlled drainage and kind of the potential impacts it has. So let's hear what he has to say.
You know, the things that really do excite me about it, John, are absolutely the technological things that we've talked about, because things are moving really fast and it ends up being a great opportunity for agriculture. And we're actually looking at taking really important discoveries and findings from other disciplines and applying them to agriculture and bringing it up to be a much more high-tech industry. And it's been high-tech for years with, you know, yield monitors and those things. But I think, you know, when we start looking at precision management in fields, and you think about precision ag in terms of fertilizer, And now you can think about if we're using this technology and we're doing conservation drainage, controlled drainage in a field, maybe we're going to be able to actually manage different areas of the field differently because of the technology and the different soil types, a little bit heavier soil over here, a little lighter over there within a farmer's field. And that's just really cool. To be able to embrace that technology, build teams of people that can work on these and work together to solve problems and come up with really good solutions for farmers, that's really gratifying as a person who works in ag.
Wow. He got pretty excited about controlled drainage.
He got really excited, really riled up.
And honestly, like, his vision makes me really excited too. One factor I liked that he brought out was any advances made in controlled drainage, like, that could potentially have impacts to any drainage technology that we would consider in the future. So if we can actively manage controlled drainage, we can actively manage bioreactors, we can actively manage saturated buffers, and all it takes is inputs, algorithms, and the sensors and technology to do that.
Yeah, and then we can apply that on a precision scale because not all parts of that field would be the same.
Yeah, I love that point. And really thinking, again, kind of relating all this back to precision management and precision agriculture, water is not something we typically think of from a precision perspective. I guess from an irrigation perspective, yes, but not drainage, not kind of the water in the field.
Right. We've gone from looking at something we're trying to get out of our way to using it to our advantage.
Yeah, to viewing it as the resource that it is.
Yeah, an important one.
An important one. So we've learned a lot about controlled drainage today, Anthony.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the exciting thing to me is you have potential for both water quality and yield. What's it been like for you?
Well, you know, we've learned about something where we've taken water that's in our way and keeping us from doing a good job of growing crops. And we've turned that around, and now we're going to try to put that back to work for us. We're going to try to keep some of that and keep it on the landscape and make it a benefit.
If you want to learn more about anything you heard today, head on over to the SDSU Extension website. But for now, I'm John McMain.
I'm Anthony Vly.
And we'll catch you next time.